We're going to open the work session on Senate Bill 587. Adrienne, you want to go over the dash A01?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. What you have in front of you for consideration this morning, after yesterday's work session, are a set of amendments, and I've provided you with a copy of the amendments, which are marked work drafts, not for distribution. However, Legislative Council agreed that in order for you to have something in front of you to work from, that this was an appropriate move. They are labeled Senate Bill 587-A01, and the date is 7-6-99. I've also provided you with a hand-engrossed copy of the bill with those draft work copy amendments folded into them. As to the details, they do refer to the items that were discussed yesterday having to do with the number of days that a jurisdiction has to review and provide the process that then, if it's a jurisdiction of more than 300,000 people, they have 15 days instead of the 10 days to perform that function before the alternative process kicks in. And Joe Brewer here and Scott Barry, they can refer to the other content of the amendments if you like. I will also note that, reminder that, as I described yesterday, there is an effect on the agency's expenditures that haven't been budgeted, and there is position requirements for the program, which also is not currently in their budget. And if you choose to move the bill, I would also recommend that you include in your motion an increase in the Department of Consumer and Business Services other fund expenditures by $147,106 for the personal services and services and supplies associated with the program that's encompassed in the bill, and the increase their position authority by 1.25 FTE for the 901 biennium.
I'm sure. With those latter two things to be done in the bill?
Madam Chair and Senator Crow, we would have a budget report for this measure, but I'd like to make record that you acknowledge that this is a requirement.
I see. And how would then the budget be amended to do that?
I have submitted to Legislative Council an amendment request to Senate Bill 587 incorporating an expenditure limitation increase provision to the department's budget bill, which is House Bill 5012.
Okay, well, that's the way we do 5013, I believe.
Oh, to the department's budget bill. Never know.
That budget bill hasn't passed yet? Or
it has been through both chambers, which is why we need an additional amendment.
Okay.
Do you have any comments?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Brewer, Administrator of the Building Codes Division. Very quickly, going over the impacts of this bill, the bill will allow the division to license third-party providers, provide for oversight, that's the budget impact, providing position and support, actually go out and monitor and audit third-party providers, ensure they're operating in a fashion consistent with the requirements of the code. In addition to that, PCD monitoring, local governments may also provide operational monitoring as these activities are carried on. Licensees may not perform both in the inspection and the plan review. That's another control that was built into the bill. And licensure does not apply to special inspectors that are identified in the code. That's a significant issue for the jurisdictions. The jurisdictions will provide primary authority, gatekeeper role, as it were, in terms of providing access to third-party providers. Local governments will have 10 working days to complete simple residential plan reviews and 15 days for cities and counties over 300,000. That's one of the changes in the A-01 draft amendment. The other change in that area is that the department has committed to considering operating plans and its determinations of other conditions that may allow for a longer period for plan review. Each jurisdiction has on file with the department a current operating plan. That current operating plan and the time frames allowed in it will be considered in terms of determining whether longer plan review time period should be allowed. Commercial projects are exempted from this process. Local governments may control the payment to the third party if they choose. The fees collected under these activities will be dedicated to the operation of building inspection programs. Electrical fees will remain dedicated to that activity specific, but all other funds may be commingled for the support and activity of the building inspection program, which is, again, a significant issue for the jurisdictions. And finally, statewide appeals process is put in place. It should be made clear that the first level of appeal will be to the local building official. Then the appeal will go on to the chief inspector that will be authorized at the department level. This is a level of appeal below the board appeal and is much more timely. When there's conflict at the building official level, in the past those appeals have gone on to the board and often sat in the queue for a month or two before a meeting could be scheduled. So this will allow the chief inspector to deal with those in a more timely fashion. There is one more issue I said finally before, but it does clarify that state surcharges apply to hourly activities as well as permit fees that are collected. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions the committee might have.
Any questions, Mr.
Brewer? Mr. Brewer, you said that the local government could, if they so chose, control the payment for the third party. How would that work, and what's the rationale behind that?
Through the chair to Representative Ross, some jurisdictions, some interest groups expressed concern for having a customer, an applicant, pay the third party directly. Concerns about sweetheart deals, concerns about perhaps inappropriate activity. So some jurisdictions may choose to collect those fees themselves and then pass them on to the third party at the end of the project. It was a patchwork quilt. Some jurisdictions did have that concern, others didn't. So the process in the bill is permissive, giving the jurisdictions that authority if they choose.
And could they also control the amount? Because I thought in earlier testimony you said that the amount paid to the third party would be negotiated between the contractor and that third party.
You remember that?
Chairman, Representative Ross, I believe that the amount is, if they go directly to the third party, is determined between the contractor and the third party.
Uh-huh.
If it is done directly.
Right. And so the question that some of us had was, if the contractor wanted a more superficial inspection, if they would pay more with the understanding that their inspector would be helpful.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, again, that's why controls were put in place in the bill, requiring that the third party could not do both, feeling that the plan review would come back to the jurisdiction. Again, they can do operational oversight at their level, and then the inspector will be performing those inspections in the field. And quite often, even with our plans reviewers at the state, our field inspectors find things that they missed. So while we believe we have sufficient controls in place, and certainly the jurisdictions will be reporting to the state if they suspect any of that kind of activity, the bill provides for serious sanctions, serious monetary sanctions, as well as up to a Class A misdemeanor if it's determined that a third-party provider was conducting business in that fashion.
And so at this point, the cities and the counties are satisfied with their level of checks and balances that this process provides.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, I believe they are, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Do I have a motion?
Chair.
Very true.
I move the dash A1 amendment.
Senator Trowe moves the dash A01 amendment to Senate Bill 587. Discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I move. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Doesn't have any other things? Okay. The amended bill should full waiver means would it be passed.
Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you very much. There's a work session on Senate Bill 587. There it is. Have Representative Wilson sitting on the floor. And Senator Nelson, just a minute.
Okay. Good morning, Madam Chairman. I'm Ted Ferrioli, Senate 328. I'm here with Judge Pryor and my colleague, Representative Bob Montgomery. What I'd like to do is, if permissible, if the chair is to allow a brief overview or entry section of the committee may have, but what we're hoping to do today is move this bill forward so that we can get the Frontier Learning Network kicked off in this area. Representative Montgomery has sponsored the bill. It's a bill that would create the Frontier Learning Network. What we're asking the committee to do is consider an amendment to the bill and also to move it forward today for the full ways and means of the due pass recommendation. And as you're aware, the Frontier Learning Network would operate between several very rural, very sparsely populated school districts to create a network of circuit riding features, a technology transfer, including a high-speed interactive video, and mobile classroom that would put very highly qualified teachers in various curriculum areas at different schools at different times during the year. It's kind of a twist on the 21st century circuit riding, but it does connect a whole group of at different schools, and it also accesses the interactive video capability of the internet, and also makes possible a mechanism to eliminate time and distance as barriers to learning. I'll let Judge Pryor bring us up to date on the project and then defer to my good colleague and the sponsor of the bill, Representative Montgomery, and we'll take questions.
And I will defer to Representative Montgomery, who I know has to get to another meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Bob Montgomery, District 56. I just want to thank you for your attention to House Bill 3298. I know you have a lot to do, so I'll be very brief. I'm very proud to have introduced this bill. I think rural Oregon needs some help out there in education, and this is very frontier, even by the federal designation, as I'm sure the judge will get into. I think it's an excellent idea. We need some economic development in that part of Oregon. This will give us the technology to use for that part of Oregon, I hope. And with me is Senator said, Judge Pryor, who has been very active in this from Gillum County. We have Rob Myers with us also from Condon. These are the certified smart people, and they can answer all the questions. And I'm just happy to be here and be a sponsor of the bill. Thank you for the opportunity. And I hope you can vote yes.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be brief as well. I'd like to have Rob Myers come up. We also have with us Anthony Lanning, who's the superintendent of this Curry County Sixth School District project. And what we have in the packet for your information to kind of orient you as to where we are, we handed out a list of the counties by population, and if you look, these counties involved that are shown in your packet here are the three counties that are smallest by population, and when there's a picture included in there of some of the terrain, which kind of gives you some idea of the distances between communities. There's as much distance between Arlington on the river in this district and Mitchell at the far southern end of Wheeler County, which is between Portland and Eugene. So the districts, the distances are tremendous. And the challenges for these very small rural school districts are very real challenges. And how do you bring good education to these kids over sparsely populated areas and great distances. You also find in your packet a piece that I think is so incredibly important to this project, and that is the cooperation of the 7th Judicial District Circuit Court judges who have become a full partner in this project. And if you will read on the first page of Presiding Judge Paul Crowley's last paragraph on that page, I think he really states it so well, that the benefits of collaboration between the counties and the school districts and the circuit courts are what's making this project possible. And with that, I'd like to turn it over for a few comments from Rob Myers, who has been the coordinator for this project.
Thank you, Judge Pryor. For the record, my name is Rob Myers. I'm the project coordinator for the Frontier Learning Network, and I'm also a board director for the North Central ESD. I very much appreciate the opportunity to talk with you here today, and I'll be brief. The Frontier Learning Network represents a practical and cost-effective approach to the delivery of educational services in isolated rural areas. What do I mean by isolated and rural? Well, according to a recent Fish and Wildlife study, there are more coyotes per square mile in the city of Portland than there are people in the per square mile in our region. It gives you an idea. 1.5 coyotes per square mile in Portland, 1.4 people per square mile in our area. You can draw from that what you wish. The Frontier Learning Network represents strategic alliances that bring together the resources of such diverse partners as Portland Public Schools and the Eastern Oregon Collaborative Colleges Center, 6 school districts in 6 different communities, the Northern Oregon Regional Correctional Facility and Circuit Courts, the Oregon Department of Education, Department of Economic Development, and local government, regional government, county government. The Frontier Learning Network represents a cutting-edge approach to education in the age of information technology through extensive use of two-way interactive video audio, internet-based teaching, and mobile classroom staff with circuit-rider teachers. The Frontier Learning Network represents the creation of innovative curricula designed specifically to provide for seamless integrated movement between skill training and traditional coursework. The Frontier Learning Network represents the development, of a service delivery model that can be replicated anywhere in the state of Oregon. It's a truly renewable and reusable resource statewide. The Frontier Learning Network represents a methodology which affords all students equitable access to quality education, children and adults alike. And finally, the Frontier Learning Network is not a destination but a journey that is conceived for the betterment of Oregon education and the benefit of Oregon taxpayers. Thank you for your time again. If you have any questions, we're here to answer them for you.
Senator Rob, thanks for bringing this information. Is the North Central ESD, is it composed of these 3 counties that we're considering only, or is there other counties involved in?
Madam Chair, Senator Hartung. The North Central ESD region is Sherman, Gillum, and Wheeler County specifically, but the project scope is broader than that. And we anticipate reasonably that it will not only include those 3 counties, but several other counties in eastern Oregon, as well as peripheral benefit of our relationship with the Portland Public Schools.
Okay, that was the reason for my question. This seems like a great project, and you know how you wouldn't include some of the other adjoining counties. It seems to me you at least ought to move in that direction.
That's a part of the plan, Madam Chair, Senator Hartung. That's a part of the plan. That's why we call it a journey and not a destination, because we're not there yet and suspect that we may never arrive there.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson? Could you just kind of explain maybe some of the potential partnerships or existing partnerships with community colleges and that aspect of your plan?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, yes, sir, I can. We have arranged at present an informal alliance with Eastern Oregon Collaborative College Center, which is Blue Mountain Community College, Eastern Oregon University, and Treasure Valley Community College. They have already bridged many of the what I guess can reasonably consider territorial gaps that have existed in education that have unfortunately proven to be barriers in terms of being able to educate Oregon's both children and adults, and we're collaborating with them in order to be able to take a look at education literally on a birth to death continuum in eastern Oregon. And also we'd like to serve as a conduit of information and dialogue between the rural education in Eastern Oregon and urban education in Portland Public Schools. Those are two of the most important education-specific alliances that we're developing.
Much of this area is not served by community colleges. It is outside the community college district. There have been a couple of attempts to try and increase the service areas of the community colleges, but we run into the same equation that we all do, and that is, what are you doing for me? How are you going to improve your services to me as a constituent in this area? And what will justify the increase in costs if we added this whole district to a community college service area? Because we're finding that increases in taxing districts. This project can help serve as a bridge with the partnerships with community colleges and Eastern Oregon University and some other places. We can begin to offer course curriculums in areas that they're not currently available with the interactive video. That means training and certifications that currently people have to travel large distances to avail themselves of, take time off work, go to a community in the valley to get their certification, EMT training and police and other services. Some of those courses in medical training, some of those courses can be offered interactively, and they're currently not available because we don't have the network out. So this is another opportunity to sort of make an interim step between where we are in education and where we need to go, which is full communication, full partnership with many levels, community-based education, school district level, community college education, the university system that's Eastern Oregon-based, and the Department of Higher Education that's statewide. This gives us an opportunity to do that, sort of an intermediary step.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this morning. Just a few questions. Could you describe what your targeted number of students you anticipate this program would affect?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, that's a good question. There are currently 1,050 students K-12 in the North Central ESD region. However, we anticipate for obvious reasons, because of the scope of the project, that it will impact far more students than that. We have tentatively arranged for student exchanges with Chris Poole Jones, the Portland Public School District, teacher exchanges as well. So in terms of contingent benefit, that's difficult to say. Directly, it will benefit 629 kids in the 6-12 area, grade 6 through grade 12 in the North Central ESD. But through our alliances with Eastern Oregon Collaborative College Center, Portland Public Schools, and the other four smallest ESDs in the state, which are Lake, Grant, Malheur, and Wallala, we anticipate benefiting far more students than that in the not very distant future. I hope that answers your question.
No,
for some reason it doesn't.
No, it does.
Okay.
Thank you. That's pretty specific. Is there any effort to try to find private money to help leverage this as well?
Did you want to speak to that?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, yes, there has. We have both private money that has been contributed to the project in terms of cash and also in-kind contributions.
Great. I guess one obvious question is, how are you going to measure the success of this program? I mean, if we're going to spend this amount of money on this number of children, which is laudable, I guess I'm trying to make sure that when you come back next session, you have something to measure against. Does that have any idea how we look at success on this?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, that's a good question as well. We do, and it's integrated with the design and development of the draft curriculum. There is an assessment component to the curricula, and rather than go into that in great deal detail, I prefer to say that there are measurable outcomes to the project. And once again, speaking to the journey rather than the destination aspect of this, at this particular point in time, that's a relatively fluid situation that we anticipate will change, not so that we can make the outcomes necessarily proportionate to what we put in, but rather so that they become valid. That's our concern. We want to make sure that those assessments and those outcomes are valid.
Madam Chair, may I take a crack at a little bit of answering that? Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I want to give you a real non-educational response to that question, okay? What I see happening is the benefit is being demonstrated already by the partnerships, the people that are stepping up to participate in this. And as we speak, we are having more and more people, entities, businesses, whatever, step forward to be part of this. I think that's a great demonstration of whether this is going to be successful or not. So we expect that to continue.
And there's a range of different measurements that can be taken. Of course, we're going to hold the school districts responsible for the same standards every other school has to meet. But what's interesting to me is the course curriculum materials that are not currently available in these communities. That's going to be a standard I use to measure. For instance, some of the discussions that we have in this building are about dollars. Well, almost all of the discussions we have in this building are about dollars. Equalization funding, it's been a, you know, that's been a something that we've lived with for a couple of biennium. Now we're talking about ESD equalization funding. But course curriculum and material, and whether or not you have an enriched curriculum or not, is also an issue we ought to be concerned about. There are an awful lot of offerings that are available in the cultural centers of our communities that will transfer and translate very well, and they ought to be available to kids everywhere in the state of Oregon. That's what the interactive video offers. We might not be able to get the curriculum and the teachers to relocate to an area where we have more Jack Rabbits and coyotes and we have people, but we certainly can expose those kids to that course material because we can bring some of the cultural materials that we have in our cultural centers, and that's a two-way street. Now, there's a Native American culture that exists in this area that kids in Portland need to be exposed to. There's music and art and dance and other things that, you know, that exist in the metropolitan areas that our kids need to have some contact with and exposure to. That's the beauty of the interactive video. It eliminates distance and time as barriers to learning. What needs to happen is that we need to get this ring built so that we can get these local communities connected with each other. Not every one of these schools can have an outstanding math teacher, but one of them can, or two of them can, and those teachers can team teach that curriculum into the interactive network and make the circuit so that each of their students actually meets and interacts with them several times during the course of the year. But they're also available in that classroom on a daily basis because of the interactive video. So humanities, social sciences, all the course and curriculum materials will have key faculty that essentially run what would be, I guess you could call it analogous to a school, a video school. And they'll move around so that each one of the kids gets to meet them and interact with them, but they're also going to have a classroom presence throughout these schools. So it's a unique concept. I don't know of a parallel. We need to try it and make sure that it's going to work, and we need to try it on a place where we have the need. These folks really need to make this program work.
Just a couple of questions about the funding. This doesn't come off the top of the school fund. It's an additional appropriation. It may be come from money that might go to the school fund, but it doesn't come off the top. What about, is it a one-time program, or is it just going to be a continuing appropriation over time, and will it be the same amount? What about the roll-up costs?
Madam Chairman, we hope this program shows clear merit and that it becomes a permanent feature of education anywhere you have remote or distance issues. And we're going to have those in Eastern Oregon forever. So we assume that this kind of an approach will be a permanent approach.
Madam Chair, Senator Crowell, we would anticipate that what we've requested is sustained funding in the amount of $900,000 per year or $1.8 million per biennium. And we would consider that to be, let's say that funding would be a catalyst to be able to expand the program, but we would require at least that amount of money every year. We would then consider it our obligation to find additional resources should the program expand.
Without this funding, how possible would be the other funding we give to these kids? How possible would that be to find enough money to do some of this? Is it just impossible?
Madam Chair, Senator Crowell, of course, nothing is impossible, but it would become very, very difficult, quite frankly. to a certain extent, this money will be used as matching financial resources for other funding. We intend to be able to use this to leverage to expand the program any amount less than the net for which we're asking is going to result essentially in a dollar-for-dollar reduction in the amount of services we're going to be able to provide those kids right now, and they're going to have to be able to, are going to be forced to wait just that much longer to be able to have equitable access to quality education.
Do you know what we spend per child now? What's the existing money for these kids? What's the average?
Madam Chair, Senator Trow, it's very close to the state average on a component district basis.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good morning. Good to see all of you. First of all, to Mr. Meyer, we were joking yesterday about you being a regular visitor in our office, and I want you to know you now have a permanent desk up there. Come on back. I'm very excited about the project and look forward to voting for it, hopefully this morning. And I want to draw the members' attention to a letter that hopefully you have in your bill files. It's a letter from our Portland Public School Superintendent, Ben Canada. I've been in conversation with him about this collaboration. And just to paraphrase some of what he says in his letter to me about the Frontier Learning Network, our district is very interested in collaboration with other interested parties through this network. We see this as an opportunity to provide important opportunities to share information, resources, technology with other school districts, businesses, and local governments. And by the way, I would like to hear Senator Ferrioli talk about the economic development tie in all of this. And again, I see this, just speaking personally now, as a wonderful opportunity to bridge that urban-rural divide that we all talk about so much. This is a real live opportunity on the ground that can connect our communities in some real and meaningful ways. So I look forward to being a part of moving this proposal forward, and I was pleased to hear Mr. Meyer say that he's been in conversation with Chris Poole Jones up in our district, who is one of our resident smart people who know how to make all of this work. Again, I would like to hear some comments from Senator Ferrioli on the economic aspect of this collaboration.
Madam Chairman, to address Senator Gorsuch's question, the Senator Nelson worked long and hard in this legislative session to do some technology transfer mechanisms and infrastructure building in Eastern Oregon and rural Oregon, all of rural Oregon. And this ties in very nicely with that. We simply need folks to understand that the infrastructure for high-speed telecommunications doesn't exist in most of rural Oregon. And we hear a lot about the mobility of folks that can bring a job with them and live anywhere in the world, as long as they have high-speed access to the internet. Well, it took about 2.5 years and a lot of hard work to get Long Creek Elementary and Graydon High School connected in any mechanism with internet server. We had to end up begging for a microwave transmitter to be added to the Forest Service site on one of the mountains between Long Creek and the nearest local server, and then had to raise money from the community to build the connection so that we could actually get any internet at all to Long Creek. That is not untypical of these areas. I've got a community grant that doesn't even have phone service in it. The only phone there is a mobile, you know, or shortwave radio. The distances and times and technology applications in some of rural Oregon would be an amazing hurdle, an amazing barrier. Most of you would find incredibly difficult and almost incomprehensible that we're in the 21st century or on the eve of it. We still don't have communities that have basic hardwired telephone service. Getting this ring of communities connected with high-speed telecommunications also gives us the opportunity to do job training, job development, and career opportunities. You know, you raise your kids and you give them the best education you can at the local level, and then we in rural Oregon tend to export them to other communities, either more urban communities or out of state, both to college to get their education and finish their job training capabilities and then for their careers. this at least offers us the opportunity to attract new businesses that do need high-speed internet, to do the training that we need to make our kids as competitive as the kids that are coming out of urban schools, to expose them a little bit more to the possibilities of life and career. And so there are tremendous economic and human development potentials here. Almost unimaginable that we have many communities who simply don't have these assets available now. So this is a huge potential to develop the economic opportunities in rural Oregon. And without it, they'll come. It'll just take a lot longer to get there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Fisher.
Yeah, he's causing me to laugh a little bit. Is we try so hard to bring some of the work ethic and some of the other things that we have in our country to the city. I'm almost hoping this is only a one way. You talked about wanting to expose the kids to the music and the different things in Portland. I'm not too terribly certain that's an issue, but I guess at least in that you can train Portland to live with the coyotes. So I,
well,
there might be some.
Madam Chairman, there's no doubt that the communities all across Oregon can benefit from the interactions. Absolutely. We'll share the best of all of the qualities that we have. At least we'll try.
This is a question or a comment from any one of the three of you. I'm really interested in small schools. I think they work technically well if they have the kind of resources that I see you putting here. In front of Senate Education, we had some fantastic testimony and students from the Helix School District, Senator Nelson District, 171 students there, K through 12, and there isn't any reason why what we're talking about here can't be made available to Helix, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that impressed me about Helix, I think they haven't had one dropout since 1989, is that right, Senator? So what is the dropout rate in the schools in this district we're talking about?
Madam Chair, Senator Hartung, it's less than 3%.
Less than 3%. Approximately how many of your kids go on to community college or higher ed?
Roughly 70%.
70%?
Yes.
And, Madam Chairman, I'm so glad that Senator Hartung asked the corollary question, because it's not just the dropout rate, it is the matriculation rate. How many of these kids are going to college?
Mm-hmm.
And if you had an urban school that had only a two-thirds of the students that went on to college, you'd be worried about that number. I think this will improve those numbers. I hope it will.
Madam Chair, Senator Hartung, if I might expand just for a moment very quickly on what Senator Ferraioli said. The fundamental underlying purpose of the Frontier Learning Network is to provide a seamless way for kids to get a four-year college degree. That's really the purpose of this. It's not alternative education as such. It's not vocational tech training as such. What we feel is it provides a proper, seamless vehicle for kids to start out pre-K and end up 16 years later before they realize what's happened with a four-year degree. Now, and that's not going to fit all kids, and so we're going to make allowances for those kids who choose not to do that for whatever reason along the way. But the real purpose of this is to provide kids with an equitable opportunity for a four-year college degree.
Good question. Is there any money in, we're looking at $7 million, in the for remote schools or small schools, does this program qualify for any of that money? Or if we put more money in that $7 million, could it be directed? And the other question, if we equalize ESD funding, would there be additional funds for this project through your ESD?
Madam Chairman, to Senator Hartung, there's a couple of principles at work, and one of them is that we don't intend to compete with basic school funding for this project. The other one is that we've had to scrap very hard to get this project looked at as an extra investment in infrastructure to create this network. So I think even the speculation that there might be more resources or other resources available is one that we don't want to engage in. And the bottom line is that we have a good project. We think that this is one that deserves your support. We've convinced the folks in Ways and Means and the co-chairs that it's a worthy investment, that it won't compete with K-12 funding or any other aspect of education. What we need is the vehicle to move forward.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you. We were talking about some of the other technology workers. Senate Bill 622 is now the vehicle that that's coming through. Probably would not affect this project immediately or directly, although there are two components there. One is an education component of $50 million, which would get all of the schools in the state at least hooked up. And then the other component is potentially a $70 million for basically that would help assist plants. That's like 2 or 3 years down the line, because I think the governor's office and the rest of us are trying to create some sort of planning process. But there is a potential that has to work into it, but I think that it would be more of a hand-in-hand type thing. It would not replace what I think these things are trying to do. And when 622 gets to the floor, I surely would ask if people consider that, because it not only affects Eastern Oregon, it affects Southern Oregon, it affects the coast, it affects urban Oregon, places that do not have the capacity.
Any other questions? Any other comments?
Ma'am Chairman, thank you. Yes, there's a couple that I would like to make, and it goes to a couple of the questions that have been asked here. In our amendment, we have not only reduced the amount of money we're asking for, but we are also taking out of there any reference to funding facilities. So people in this district at one time, before Measure 5, paid $46 a thousand, and most of that, over $29 of that, went to support the school system. We believe that the people there will step up and take care of the existing facilities, so we're not asking for any of that at this time at all. What we're trying to do is ask for the money that we can't raise right now to get this system in place. A key component is the piece with the circuit court system. The circuit courts are putting that system together right now. And for us to be able to get into that process, to be able to leverage that and partner with that, we have to be able to do that now. So that's one of the things that has brought us to the table in this session with this project, because it's like a confluence of events that we can put together and cooperate with to make this project go forward.
Yeah, there's some statistics from around there to go about 3% dropout rate. What is the urban dropout rate on the urban college or the urban higher education?
Do you know that?
Oh, we're using the figure of the dropout rate, 25%. The students that enter the ninth grade and don't graduate from the 12th grade, 25%.
How many go on to higher?
About 50.
Avril, would that be... 60%.
I really don't recall the specifics.
Madam Chair, perhaps I misunderstood, but I thought you were complaining that you weren't up to urban standards. It sounds to me like 70% of 97 is a horrible lot better than 60% of 75.
Madam Chairman, I should correct it. I think the statistics belie the facts that we want all the kids, whether urban or rural, to get as much education as they can possibly get to go on and be successful in life. Any of those kids in urban areas that show up with the dropout statistics are leaving school to go to work, and they're doing that because they have to. Some of the kids in our rural areas do the same thing. They leave school because they have to work. We'd like to see them at least equipped to compete in the 21st century. And I understand what Mr. Fisher is saying. I think the kids in the rural areas get exposed to a different kind of culture, a different kind of cultural experience, 4-H, ranch work, cattle work, on the farm, working at higher responsibility levels at a very young age, driving equipment, and so on and so forth. Those are not analogous in many cases to the experiences that kids in urban areas have. Kids in urban areas have lots more opportunity to have cultural experiences, music, arts, literature, and those types of things. So I think we have a lot to learn from each other.
Madam Chair, if I can just pick up on that, I think that the underlying word for me, or operative word, at least in the urban area, is potential. It may be true it's available, but that doesn't mean it's reachable. And that's always been a concern. And I think you're highlighting I guess, a concern for me. I think this is a great program, and the idea is sort of an incubator to see how we can enhance learning in rural Oregon, but clearly we have a problem in urban Oregon as well, and I appreciate what you and Senator Gordon have been doing to try to bridge that, because these are the types of links, and, you know, Portland Public Schools wants to assist as much as they can. There will be a two-way learning. I mean, we'll learn as much from this as you learn from us. So these are the types of things that we need to be doing more, bridging those needs more. So, thank you.
Madam Chair, if I might just say one last thing. As I was talking earlier about the Frontier Learning Network primarily focused toward a four-year degree, that's true, but I want to also say that one of the fundamental precepts of the Frontier Learning Network is the fact that teaching is by necessity collective, but learning is by nature individual. And what we're trying to do with the Frontier Learning Network is address those differences and make sure that each kid, every single one, has an equal access and equal opportunity for quality education. And those fundamentals, that process, applies in rural Oregon as well as urban Oregon. So we're talking about, we all know that kids are kids regardless of where they live. And they're important to, they're all important to us. Excuse me.
You want to go to the doctor? So
sorry.
I might move the bill. Judge Pryor, would you just state for the record the amount? The amended amount?
The amount in the amendment is $1,800,000.
For biennium?
Yes. Yes, sir.
For the biennium?
Yes, sir.
We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3298. Open the work session. Sue, if you want to.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, have distributed for you a fiscal impact statement prepared by the Legislative Fiscal Office. And as it's provided for in the original bill, the fiscal impact statement indicates that appropriates $3,805,000 to the Department of Education to distribute one-time a grant to the Frontier Learning Program. And you've heard Judge Pryor state that their amended amount is now $1.8 million. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending that you reduce that by 50% to $900,000. That is what is available in the budget when we consider all the other needs of the budget and what came to us.
Do you need a motion? Do you need a suspension of the rules? Is it conceptual?
Madam Chair and Representative Edwards, my understanding is that typically we don't do conceptual amendments in the committee, especially if we don't have the substantive committee chair's approval, but this has not had a hearing in the substantive committee, so as long as Representative Edwards is comfortable with the conceptual amendment, I think we can go ahead and do that.
And you're comfortable. I'm comfortable. You look comfortable.
I'm sure I'm going to accept this program and work for it. I think it's a good program. I think we ought to be concerned about rural schools. I would just like you all to know, and I know you know this already, so I'm saying the obvious, but we have rural schools in western Oregon as well. In the district I represent, there's a little school of Alsea, and we're so proud of that little school. It's done tremendously well. But if you look at how it's going to fare with the current amount of state support at 495, it's still going to have to cut its budget. It's not funded well enough at 495. And that's a good little rural school that's pretty isolated in the timber community that's been hard hit up there. And if you look at Willamina, for instance, another rural school that's hard hit, we need to be helping them. So I'm going to vote for them because I think this is good. But I think we also need to think about how do we get resources to all of these rural schools.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to amend House Bill 3298 and insert an appropriation of $900,000 for the Frontier Learning Network.
I wish it were bigger because I think we want to fund this adequately, but I wish that we had more money for schools generally in a larger amount. There are a lot of them need help.
Okay, on line 20, they wanted to remove the language retrofitting facilities. You can amend the motion.
Okay, I'll amend my motion. I didn't realize that technicality, line 20, to delete retrofitting facilities. And then, again, restating that we would insert $900,000 rather than the $3,805,000 that the charge of the bill.
Any questions?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher?
I want to support this, reluctantly, having come from an Eastern Washington equivalent of antelope or spray or fossil, and feeling that I got an excellent education from that that was not inferior in any way to what was had in the more urban areas of Spokane and Seattle and some of the other areas of Washington. But allow you to get a try to see what it goes to protect your own interests in this process. Don't hesitate to educate some of the urban areas in this process as much as you receive from them.
Are you comfortable with the amendment? Excuse me.
Madam Chairman, yes, we are.
Further discussion? Any? No vote. Amen. Motion carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We need a motion to carry it.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3298 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with due pass recommendation.
Discussion? Any no vote? Amen. Motion carried. We're adjourned. And I have a quick announcement.
Thank you very much.